Schleicher v. Salvation Army, Mr. Weldy. Mr. Weldy.
Good morning, Your Honor. Ronald Weldy on behalf of the Schleichers. It is the position of the Schleichers that they have set forth sufficient evidence to survive the motion to dismiss that was filed against them.
Well, but it's true, isn't it, that ministers are not subject to the minimum wage law?
Your Honor, when the ministers are performing religious activities...
Okay, so the question is whether they were performing religious activities when they were managing the stores?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that's really the focus of this case.
Well, when they testified, I'm looking at page 140 of the transcript. So they're asked, in your role as administrators of the Indianapolis Adult Rehabilitation Centers, you and your husband were responsible for preaching, correct, and leading worship, singing, correct, and overseeing or leading daily devotions, correct, overseeing or teaching Bible studies to the beneficiaries, correct, overseeing or conducting Christian living classes, teaching a soldier's class, equivalent to a catechism class in other denominations. Well, doesn't that mean that as administrators, they were engaged in substantial minister-type activities?
We don't deny that in the least, Your Honor.
Then why aren't they exempt?
Your Honor, I hearken back to a second-year law professor who was teaching us agency and principles. And, you know, the reference he liked to use in the example was people can wear different hats at different times. And quite frankly, the Schleichers wore two different hats on behalf of the Salvation Army.
I don't understand you. Suppose you have a Catholic bishop or assistant bishop or something in Chicago whose responsibilities are administrative. Because the Catholic Church, obviously, has an administrative structure. It's all manned by priests. So does that mean he would be subject to minimum wage protection because he's doing administration rather than having a parish post or something?
No, Your Honor. If he's administering the church's activities, I wouldn't
Pardon?
Make that argument. If he's administering the church's activities, I would not make that argument.
Right. Okay. But your clients are administering a program, these thrift stores, which apparently is part of the Salvation Army's religious mission because the ministers who are in charge, they mingle religious activities into this work therapy. So I don't understand why that isn't as legitimate minister work as would be a Catholic priest who was responsible for the bookkeeping in the diocese.
Your Honor, if the operation of the thrift stores is a commercial activity, and even though it is run by a religious organization...
No, but that's... No. That's the question. That's not the answers. If a thrift store is meant to save the souls of the people working there, these, you know, unfortunates, drunkards or dope addicts or what have you, and they're having their souls saved by working, you know, by washing the feet of the poor or something like that, why wouldn't that be core ministerial work? A church that has a legitimate belief in work therapy under ministerial supervision as a way to salvation.
Well, according to the Supreme Court in the Susan and Tony Alamo Foundation case...
The Supreme Court has dealt with this issue.
According to the Supreme Court, Your Honor, even when you're dealing with drunkards and derelicts and alcoholics and people who need rehabilitation, and those people are working at the enterprises run by a church...
What were the facts in Alamo?
In Alamo, Your Honor, you had the same type of individuals that the Salvation Army is attempting to rehabilitate at their rehabilitation centers. You had addicts, you had people who were homeless, those types of individuals who then went to the Tony and Susan Alamo Foundation, were rehabilitated, and as part of that rehabilitation, actually had work therapy at the service station. There's a whole plethora of businesses that the foundation ran, and they were normal day-to-day businesses. And the Supreme Court said that these are commercial businesses underneath an economic reality test. They are out there. They're open to the public. They serve the public. And they are in competition with ordinary business entrepreneurs. And as such, those different businesses run by the foundation were covered by the act.
Well, even if we put religion aside here, why wouldn't you look at this case and say, your claim is that they were undercompensated, violation of Illinois law, should have gotten overtime and all this sort of stuff. But why wouldn't it be more fair to look at it as somebody who's more in a supervisory capacity, plus they get their home, they got a home to live in, they get their utilities taken care of, they get an automobile. How is that all factored in?
Your Honor, it's an interesting question we haven't been able to get to in this case. To the extent that they wanted to claim that they were underneath some sort of supervisory exemption or something like that, then that means that they at least had to be paid, I believe, $450 a week, which is the fair minimum required.
How do you factor in all these non-monetary compensable parts of their
I mean, they do get credit for that. That's absolutely something that can be argued, even though I don't think that there's going to be any question that on a weekly basis, these two people were not receiving a total of $900 a week in non-wages benefits from the Salvation Army, meaning their house and the car and all this stuff is not going to equal up to $900 on a weekly basis, which is what would be required in order for them to be exempt underneath, say, the executive exemption of the FLSA.
If we go back to Alamo, there's a very important distinction. The plaintiffs in Alamo, or the persons held to be entitled to minimum wage, they were not ministers. They were the flock, right? They were the flock. They were not ministers.
Actually, I totally disagree, Your Honor. There's absolutely no discussion.
They were the associate. They're called associates. They're not ministers.
Your Honor, there is absolutely no description of the entirety of the associates, who they were, what duties.
The Supreme Court describes them as associates. They're not ministers.
Your Honor,
there's a critical difference, right? Because if they're just the flock, then there's no question of whether you're going to have to decide issues of doctrine. But in the case of the ministers, we have to decide, is their activity in supervising an adult rehabilitation center, is that in fact a religious function, so that they're actually operating as ministers, not as businessmen operating in unrelated commercial activity?
Your Honor, first, there's evidence in the record that the Schleichers actually acted as a store manager.
Well,
and that's not a ministerial position.
Look.
I mean, that is a commercial function.
Their testimony was that their supervision included, you know, leading these prayer things and all this other religious stuff.
Yes, Your Honor. There's a lot of hours
look,
in the week, and they split them up.
You said a legitimate Catholic priest whose entire work for the church is administrative, he's, you know, not covered by minimum wage. Now, the only difference here is that these ministers are administering not the Salvation Army's headquarters or something like that, but these thrift shops. And then doesn't it become critical whether their work as thrift shop administrators is, in fact, ministerial work?
If
they've hired a layperson to be bookkeeper for the thrift shop, that person isn't protected, and presumably under Alamo, the unfortunates, what they call the beneficiaries, who actually work there, they may be entitled to minimum wage. But the minister who supervises it is not, I don't think.
Here,
unless, you know, there was some determination that it's fake, it's not really part of Salvation Army theology, which I don't think you argue.
Your Honor, I'm going to step back because I've been asked several questions, and I'd like to reach back to one of those, and I hope that's okay with the court.
Sure.
Your Honor, first and foremost, the ministerial exception has been held to include not only people who are ordained, but people who are not ordained. So when we're talking about the associates in the Tony and Susan Alamo Fauci.
I don't think this is a ministerial exception case. I think it's a case about about whether the statute, the Fair Labor Standards Act, which is limited to commercial or business activities, is applicable, because it seems to me what these ministers were doing, unlike the associates, the people who just sell this stuff in the thrift shop, they're engaged in religious activity, not in commercial activity.
Well, Your Honor, I would submit that somebody who's in charge of firing, disciplining, hiring, and general supervision of people at a thrift shop, that's not a religious activity.
It's not ordinarily, but if it's done by a minister and can only be done by a minister because he's supposed to do it in a way that inculcates, you know, religious understanding in these people, he's basically, he and his wife, they're like preaching in a thrift shop, right? Now, if they're preaching in a thrift shop, they're still ministers.
Well, Your Honor, first off, I don't think the record supports that.
What I read to you, it's their own statement.
Your Honor, that's what they did at the Adult Rehabilitation Center. That's not what, they didn't testify that they did that at the thrift shops. They didn't deny that they did that at the Adult Rehabilitation Center on a weekly basis.
But the thrift shop was part of the Adult Rehabilitation Center.
There is a warehouse and a thrift shop which are attached to the Adult Rehabilitation Center. And then at one point in time, though the number has varied up or down, there were five other thrift shops scattered throughout the Indianapolis area. You know, when they went in to supervise or to discipline the store manager or one of the assistant store managers at a thrift shop that was miles away from the Adult Rehabilitation Center, that is the act of a district manager who is, if they're working for Goodwill, is going to be paid pursuant to the FLSA, whether or not they fall underneath the executive exemption of that or whether or not they're paid on an hourly basis. That is an activity that they're going
all the people who are doing the selling in the thrift shop, they're all living in the Adult Rehabilitation Center, aren't they?
No, they're not, Your Honor. They have, my impression and my understanding is that the ho-hum workers, the hourly people there are the people who are at the Rehabilitation Center. However, the management is actually just regular people. Some of them maybe at one point in time were at the Rehabilitation Center and they're now no longer there. But we've got regular employees here. And so they're acting as a district manager for a group of stores. And if we were talking about the Goodwill, that district manager would either be falling into one of the exemptions in the FLSA or be governed by the Act. And the Supreme Court and Tony and Susie Alamo Foundation said,
but it wasn't dealing with ministers.
But, Your Honor, if the Salvation Army isn't required to pay their district manager.
The problem with, why wouldn't a sensible approach, because there is in the background here concern that we don't want personally, or we want other judges to get involved in figuring out what is Salvation Army theology, what is the limits of the Salvation Army church, and so on. So why wouldn't it be sensible to have a presumption that if you're a legitimate minister of a legitimate religion, you know, recognized by the IRS as the Salvation Army as being legit, there's presumption that you're not covered by minimum wage. But then if, you know, there's evidence that it's kind of fake, all you're doing is managing some, you know, the Catholic Church has a macaroni factory that maybe a wealthy Catholic leaves it a factory. So who wants to sell it? But meanwhile, it's running it, and it sends a bishop over to run the macaroni factory. And so he would be engaged in a commercial activity. But so that would rebut the presumption. But in this case, as far as we know from this skimpy record, these people, their management of the thrift shop is imbued with their efforts to save the souls of the unfortunates who are working there and living in the adult rehabilitation centers.
That's what the Salvation Army would like you to believe, Your Honor, but I don't think the facts support that assertion. No, Your Honor, they absolutely performed ministerial functions, but they did not do that throughout their working week. They absolutely performed the job roles because they testified to that fact, Your Honor. They testified at the evidentiary hearing. They testified via affidavits that we presented on the opposition to motion to dismiss. Your Honor, if there's no more, I should sit down.
Thank you, Mr. Weldy. Mr. Hollis?
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning to the court, and good morning to my distinguished opponent. The Schleichers had but one hat that they wore, and that was the officer's cap of a Salvation Army officer, a minister in the church. The Schleichers have admitted repeatedly throughout this case that they were ministers of the Salvation Army. And the First Amendment bars government regulation and review of a minister's
salary. Can you tell me in what way the Fair Labor Standards Act burdens their role as ministers or as shoe salesmen or whatever they're doing?
Certainly.
Why is that? You know, we've gone from these discrimination statutes, which it's perfectly obvious how that burdens the religious activity, because that determines who's going to administer the religion, who's going to be a religious minister. I mean, that's an obvious burden, but it's beyond me to see why the Fair Labor Standards Act is regarded as analogous in some way to Title VII.
Certainly, Your Honor. Well, as this court recognized in Alicia Hernandez versus Catholic Bishop of Chicago, the mere act of a government investigation and review, court review, of a minister's salary itself impinges on the internal government and administration of the court, and therefore, by its coercive effect, can't do anything but violate the separation of church and state.
Go back to what your opponent, Mr. Weldy, was saying, that if they just, if someone left a factory, bequeathed a factory to Salvation Army, and they sent a minister who maybe he'd been in business before he became a Salvation Army minister, if they sent him to run it, wouldn't he be, and that's all he did, he just runs the factory, he doesn't do any religious stuff, wouldn't that be subject to Fair Labor Standards Act?
Very well may be, and there's the rub. The thrift stores
but
are
that would be, but to determine that, it would mean you have to get into the facts, right? Figure out what he's doing. So Mr. Weldy suggests, well, maybe all the Schleichers do is rotate among these off-site thrift shops and supervises the management of them and doesn't do anything religious with respect to the thrift shops, is distinct from the adult rehabilitation centers.
That, though, is inherently inconsistent with their testimony.
Wait, I can't hear you.
That was inherently inconsistent with their own testimony at the hearing in the trial court on pages 142 and 143.
Well, that's, oh, all right.
The Schleichers acknowledge the religious aspect of the work therapy that they were overseeing in the thrift stores. Not only did the Schleichers acknowledge that, but the district court found in its order that the thrift store work, the work therapy that takes place there, is religious in nature. That's also been noted by the Third Circuit in the Department of Community Affairs case that we cite.
No, but Mr. Weldy said that this discussion at 140 and so on relates to the adult rehabilitation centers, not the thrift shops.
The thrift shops are part of the adult rehabilitation center. It's all one.
Yeah, but I mean, if they're teaching prospective members of the Salvation Army Church, they're not doing that in the thrift shops, are they?
Well, I believe there is testimony in the record that while they were in the thrift stores, the Salvation Army ministers would interact with the beneficiaries, talk with them about their spiritual health, their development. So yes, there's that type of ministry
going on.
How
does the Fair Labor Standards Act interfere with any of that religious activity?
Well, there's testimony in the record, Your Honor.
You still haven't persuaded me of that.
Let me try. There's testimony in the record, Your Honor, from two of the ministers, the Major Riches, who was the supervisor in the church hierarchy to the Schleichers, and also to Captain Irvine, who was their successor, that starting to track hours fundamentally changes the nature and the focus of their position. The ministers are paid not even a salary, but an allowance, if money permits, to defray living expenses so that they can devote their full attention 24/7 to the ministry of the Salvation Army. And to go in and say, all right, now you've got to start tracking your hours and you're going to be paid for overtime over 40 in a week, that changes fundamentally the nature of the position, at least in the view of the Salvation Army and the ministers that testify.
Of course, there's no exception in the Fair Labor Standards Act to cover that type of activity, is there?
Let me respond to that in two ways. One, the ministerial exception is not a creature of statute. It's created by the First Amendment.
If there is such a thing, yes.
Yes. And second of all, the Department of Labor in its field operations handbook specifically notices that ministers and recognizes that ministers, lay brothers, deacons, other religious type people that are serving in the schools, in the hospitals, and the other commercial ventures of a church are not employees for purposes of the Fair Labor Standards Act. That's a recognition.
Is that true of a minister, of a priest who teaches in a parochial school?
Certainly.
Well, even if he's take the vow of poverty, though, too, right?
You're talking about what's in this enforcement manual now?
Mm-hmm. The field operations handbook.
That's not entitled to Chevron deference, though, is it?
No, but it's the DOL's position on this, and I think it's the correct position.
So if a priest teaches a lay subject in a parochial school, he still is not subject to FLSA?
If it's part of his ministry overall, then no, he would not be.
What about this situation? Suppose you have, I'm picking up what Judge Evans was saying, so suppose you have one of these monastic orders that take vows of poverty, but they're producing wine or something like that, which they sell. Would they be considered? Would they be subject to minimum wage?
No, they don't lose their status merely because they're engaged in a commercial activity as part of their overall ministry. The churches all the time engage in commercial activity. For instance, let me give you a couple of examples. It's hard to find, at least down in the Indianapolis area, a church that doesn't run a daycare ministry. It's run at the church. You bring in students and children and provide daycare services to them. Clearly, it's a commercial activity, but almost always, at least that I'm familiar with, the person in charge of that daycare ministry is a minister on staff. Sure, on the weekend he's preaching.
The question whether that's an interstate commerce, I suppose.
Oh, I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think it's clearly commercial activity, and would fall within the scope of that regulation. And so what's the effect of that? Well, the employees that minister hires to come in and teach and prepare the food for the children are covered by the FLSA. The church has subjected itself to FLSA coverage with respect to those employees. But the fact that the minister may come in throughout the week and interact with the children, may help prepare the food, may help give their lessons, doesn't make him any less a minister. The purpose of the daycare ministry is twofold. One is to interact with and share the gospel with the children and their parents, and also to raise funds to support the mission of the church. Clearly a commercial activity, however. Second example would be, let's take the facts of this court's decision in Tomek, where we had a music director at a Catholic church, and let's expand on those a little bit. Perhaps the church offers, and the music director oversees, a music lessons program during the week, a music lesson ministry, where the point is twofold. One, to bring in folks from the outside who pay for music lessons, instrumental or vocal music lessons, to interact with them, to share the gospel with them, but also to make some money, frankly, to support the religious mission of the church. Does that mean that music director in Tomek, who this court found was a minister for purposes of the ministerial exception, suddenly loses his ministerial status? No, it's part of his ministry. It's a component of the overall ministry. And so those are but two examples of commercial activity. Schools and hospitals, as the Department of Labor mentions in its field operations handbook, or some others.
Hospitals, too, so nuns who are nurses or so on wouldn't be entitled to minimum wage?
No, Your Honor, no. Mm-hmm. And, of course, under Tomek as well, you look at the actual law of the church in question to determine whether one is a minister. Here, of course, the Schlegers have admitted that they were. But beyond that, they attended the Salvation Army's seminary, two-year program, graduated from that, and were ordained and commissioned as
officers. Do we know? I assume they're no longer ministers.
They are not. Their services were terminated in May of 2006, Your Honor.
They were fired?
They were.
Do we know why? Or?
Because they brought this lawsuit, Your Honor.
Because they sued?
That's right. The church knows that it has First Amendment rights to determine the terms and conditions of its ministers' relationship with it, and they went to them and said, you know, what are you doing? We wish you hadn't done this. So, yes, absolutely. That's why their services were terminated.
Of course, now probably they work and they have incomes.
Yes, I believe they're in Iowa.
By the minimum wage. Pardon?
That's right. I believe they're in Iowa now and do have jobs, to my understanding, that are covered by the
paid overtime.
Exactly, Your Honor. But they admitted, as you know, to Judge Posner earlier, that they were preaching twice a week. In fact, they were in charge of all aspects of organizing and running the church services. Let's not forget that at the ARC, they had a congregation of over 100 people. The beneficiaries and then some of their family members who would come to the church, they were the senior pastors of the ARC and of the congregation there. That's reflected
clearly.
But
they wouldn't preach in a thrift store, would they? Or do we know? Or
Not preach in the sense of deliver a sermon in the thrift store, but they did. There is testimony that they would interact with the beneficiaries, and that was part of their duties, to interact with them in the thrift stores.
In the thrift stores.
In overseeing this work.
They're not asking for overtime for their preaching, though, are they?
Well, you know, let me answer that in two ways. One, they start off by arguing that there's no ministerial exception to the FLSA at all. And so if that's true, I would think they would be seeking overtime for all the hours in the week that
they
spend.
Well, they're not.
But then they go on to say, you know, we're not seeking it for that ministerial stuff. We're seeking it for thrift store stuff. And as we've seen here, that's a false dichotomy. That's part of their ministry.
This is a little off base, but if you buy a suit in a thrift store for $50 or something, a used suit, you pay a sales tax?
I believe so.
I mean, yes. Judge Posner had a wine question. I know Christian Brothers wine is taxed just like anything else coming out of Napa Valley. So.
Certainly. I mean, it is a commercial activity, the thrift stores. There's no doubt about that, and that's why the employees who work there are covered and paid in accordance with
the FLSA. So that's Alamo?
Sure. That would be Alamo. It would
so
be
covered. These.
That's right. The contention here by the Salvation Army is only that the ministers were not covered. Absolutely, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Hollis. So, Mr. Weldy? We'll give you time for rebuttal. We'll give you a minute. But look, what about this case of the monks who take a vow of poverty, but they're producing wine which is sold? Are they subject to minimum wage?
Your Honor, there's nothing that I'm aware of underneath the FLSA that would stop that monk from receiving the paycheck and turning around and donating it right back to the church and fulfilling their.
Well, that doesn't make any sense.
That doesn't make sense.
Your Honor, I. What the choice?
And so, what if he refuses to turn it back? Can they fire him?
Your Honor, it sounds like a great retaliation claim, doesn't it?
Right.
But my point is that.
Yes. So then, how would you have church discipline? Right. So you have a monastery, and they say, you know, we've got to, because of Mr. Hollis's, you know, tremendous advocacy, we have to pay you guys, you monks, we have to pay you the minimum wage and overtime and so on, because you're working all the time. But we'd like you to, you know, give it back to us. And most of them say yes, and then you have like 10% say, no, I'm going to pocket it, I'm going to live it up. What's this monkish business, you know, buy myself some fancy clothes. And then there's nothing they can do, right? So that the whole discipline of the monastery collapses.
Your Honor.
That's ridiculous. So let's assume that's ridiculous, and even though you think it's covered by FLSA, it isn't. How would you distinguish that from this case?
Your Honor, first, honestly, if a church doesn't want entanglement by the government, don't run the commercial activity.
Pardon?
If a church doesn't want entanglement by the government, by the FLSA, don't run the commercial activity. That's as simple as
that. Now, wait a second. I mean, look, this is thousands of years of what we're talking about. You're saying that monasteries would not be permitted to sell, you know, if they make, you know, icons, or if they produce, you know, Benedictine, they can't sell it? That's what you're saying.
This test articulated by the Supreme Court and Alamo Foundation is,
yeah,
if
but
they,
that's what
if
you're
they
saying,
sell to the general
look,
public...
If that can't be right.
What would stop that same people from just selling to other churches? That's not the general public.
Selling what? The Benedictine
icons.
Just to other... What, is going to have some circulating alcoholic priesthood or what? Sorry, sorry, you guys have to drink this stuff because we can't sell it to anybody else.
Your Honor, all I know is that commercial activities are governed by the FLSA, and the employees who run that commercial activity are governed by the FLSA. Whether or not they're ministers or not,
I thought you were
going to
suggest a distinction so we didn't have to hold the whole monastery component of the Catholic Church is out. It's finished.
Your Honor, the only distinction I can give you is that the religious activities of any of the churches are not commercial activities. It just doesn't fall underneath the economic reality test.
What you're saying, selling brandy is obviously a commercial activity because it's something done by non-religious organizations. But I don't think you can treat that as... As somehow all governed by FLSA.
Your Honor, the individual at the monastery who is...
has a gift shop, which I think they often do. You buy a postcard or something. Then you're saying that the priest who... Okay, so suppose you have a cathedral, has a little gift shop, it sells postcards. And then you're saying the priest who's in charge of that church, he would have to get the minimum wage for whatever. He'd have to keep a record of the time he devotes to supervising the gift shop. And then that becomes, I mean, maybe it's not, doesn't get up to 40 hours a week, but that would be subject to FLSA, right?
Your Honor, we should really have to look and see if there's...
Excuse me, what?
I'd have to know more facts to know whether or not...
Why would you have to know more facts? I'm saying it's a cathedral, it's got a priest who runs it, and it's got a gift shop that sells postcards and you know, icons and statues and so on, and pictures. So why isn't... And his job as priest includes supervising the staff of the gift shop.
He's going to train them, and he's going to fire them and discipline them, and that's all of his duties.
Well, he's in charge of the church, and the church includes the gift shop, so he's an ultimate... you know, supervisory authority over the gift shop employees.
Your Honor, to the extent that there is a quantifiable amount of time that
it's quantifiable. If he keeps a timesheet like a lawyer, he can say, yeah, I spent 6 minutes checking out the stock of the gift shop.
Your Honor, to the extent it's quantifiable and he's spending time on a commercial activity and he's not being paid at least that much in minimum wage, then yes, Your Honor. But I don't think that that's going to be the issue. I think that between services and so on and so forth, that negligible amount of time taking care of the gift shop is going to be covered. We're not talking about a negligible amount of time here.
Okay. Well, thank you very much
to
both counsel.